I'd like to welcome you to this evening's forum. The title of the forum is Homophobia. My name is Darius Larson. I'm the campus pastor at the University of St. Cloud State University in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Before I begin a little background on the topic for tonight, I just want to share some guidelines for our discussion. Many people have many different strong feelings about many different topics, and homosexuality, heterosexuality, homophobia, I'm sure is one of those topics that people feel strongly about. And I ask you that when we're trying to search through what it is we're working on and searching through tonight, that we try to learn to respect each other's opinions, keep our comments as brief as possible. That doesn't mean you have to just say two words and then move on, but rather than just having a stream of consciousness thought, to try to really put it into a brief, concise fashion, what you want to say, and then raise your hand or something, so that you're not thinking about what you're saying as you're saying it, because that tends to get a little long. And please, raise your hand and let me acknowledge you. Otherwise, we end up having all sorts of little discussions here and there and here and all over the place. I will keep us to the time limit of 10 o'clock, so you know no matter where we are in the discussion, at 10 we will have a break for those who would like to leave. And then those who would like to stay around and continue to talk further, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome to do that. I've done forums here before on homosexuality and the church, gay and Christian, but those were 2 years ago and 4 years ago. Tonight I wanted to call it homophobia, and for a particular reason. And I think more and more, and this is one of my premises, so you could somewhat see where I stand, is that the whole issue of homosexuality is as much or more a heterosexual problem or issue as it is a gay and lesbian issue. And homophobia, people have defined it as an unreasonable fear of homosexuality. And that can range from casual jokes about fags and queers to feelings of revulsion to gays and lesbians. It ranges from keeping me from getting to know my brother in a caring way, because for some reason people may think things about us, to just never trying to explore any sort of relationships of intimacy, however you define that, as close as a handshake to a hug to lots of other things. The challenge, people say, with homophobia is to change the homophobic attitude of society and not the orientation of the gay person. And that's what homophobia is. With that in mind, I've laid out here four possible spots where most people can fit themselves. They're probably sometimes a 2.3, you hedge a little bit. But in order to give us some sort of framework of a continuum of feelings and how we feel about homosexuality, I'd like to just share different impressions briefly of these four attitudes, and then open it up for any sort of discussion, questions, and feedback from you. First is the rejecting punitive side, and they basically hold that it's not Christianly legitimate, and you need to be punitive to the gays. And the closest I can see to help us understand what that means is the way most of society feels about child molesting or rape. Is kind of the same attitude some people have about gays and lesbians. And I may be pushing the argument, but a theologian or a church spokesperson that would fit that side, I think we could say would be a Jerry Falwell. That may not be fair, but it's close to being fair, I think. Secondly, is the rejecting non-punitive side, and here we have one of the great theologians on this position of Karl Barth. Karl Barth has said, to seek one's humanity in a person of the same sex is to seek a substitute for the despised partner. And this is physically, psychologically, and socially sick. It's idolatry. It violates the command of the Creator. Homosexuality must be condemned, but in the light of the gospel, the person is not condemned. Alcoholism, I think, might help us understand that position, if you're trying to get the range there. The third is qualified acceptance, and this is the theologian there who states this is probably Tillich, is the person who is probably the clearest spokesperson there. He says, change if you can. If you can't, practice abstinence, or, you know, don't do it. If you can't practice that, then at least act in a responsible way. But do not pretend your actions are normal. Then the fourth is full acceptance. Oh, by the way, there I think I haven't figured out a good one for this. The closest I can come is divorce, attitudes about divorce. I'm not sure, I don't like that. If somebody has a better idea, let me know. But the fourth one is full acceptance. And Norman Pittenger is the spokesperson for this position. The parallel is left-handedness. That the majority of the people are heterosexual, right-handedness. There's a minority of people left-handedness, but you don't deny them. At least, well, some people have been denied some things for left-handedness, and you can get into that, but that's another form. That homosexuality is a given, not a choice in this position. The same-sex relations can richly express and be a vehicle of God's intention. God is the cosmic lover, calling us to love and not hate, building an ethic of love in this relationship. Commitment, trust, tenderness, and respect for the other are the principal guidelines. As Norman Pittenger says, it's not the what that you love that's important, it's the who that you love. And the direction there is to, are you in an exploitive relationship there? And he says and that you need to get rid of what he calls the double standard. And that can work in many different ways. Maybe one other comment, that a lot of people say that you're either heterosexual or you're homosexual. Most studies say that there's once again a continuum. And studies have ranged from saying from 7 to 10% of any given audience is practicing a homosexual lifestyle at any given time. And they say roughly 40 to 50% of the population is exclusively heterosexual. The rest of the people are somewhere in between. I say that for saying one thing, that when we talk about this topic tonight, I just want to let you know that we're probably talking about people. We're talking about homophobia, people who are present. But when we're talking about homosexuality, we are also talking about people who are present. And with that in mind, I want us to try to get as clear a picture of why we as society or why we as individuals act the way or think the way we do in relationship to the topic of homophobia and gay and lesbians and the church and Christianity. So with that, I can say a heck of a lot more, but I want to open it up to you and see where you want to take this discussion this evening. Now, one way of maybe starting is just trying to see if somebody, where you identify yourself. If you want to say, I'm kind of a 2.1 and say why, or a 5.8, or a, you know, a negative 2, you know, it just some things like that. Yes?
Well, I was brought up to believe that a homosexual is a criminal, and if you hang him, it's not severe punishment enough for him.
And do you still somewhat feel that way, you mean?
Yes, I mean, when I was brought up, a homosexual was such a terrible monster that you avoid them as though they were criminals. In other words, you treat them the same way you would a murderer or an arsonist.
Okay, I went to school in the 60s, so they're going to hear it from that perspective. Sympathy with the worldly when I was in school, they were state killing in that time. We didn't know that, but a third of the people that were in the Sympathy Weekend were prostitutes, gay, or living on the streets. And we were in small group discussions. And at the end of the weekend, everyone told their name and their profession or what year they were students. So we got to know people as people first and their stereotypes second. And I think for me, that gave me a reason why I'm about a 3.8.
They do say the more that you know personally, and you know that they are gay or lesbian, the more that you know that about somebody that you have some sort of association with, the less homophobic you are in studies. But you can take issue with that too if you would like. Yeah.
I guess I tend to agree with that because originally I found homosexuality really repulsive, and then I found that some of my friends were homosexuals, and some of these people I had a great deal of respect for, and I really have to change my point of view because I can't condemn those people just because they're homosexual. I'm struggling with that issue, but it's causing me to take a second look at my stand because of people on your own who are homosexual.
Yes.
About 6 months ago, Newsweek had a feature story about a homosexual young man who grew up in Vancouver, Washington, and it was extremely touching to me, and I was unaware of much of the feelings that a homosexual person trying to find his sexual identity and not being able to fit what torture he went through was well received.
How did that change you? Or not, you don't have to state where you are on here, but just
put me up on the scale more than I was.
Okay. Okay.
Is loading rejecting homosexuality as a norm, or saying that the objective, does that make you homophobic? I mean, if you, for example, if you read the Bible, or if you believe in what Barth said, or does that make you homophobic? I mean, to me, phobia means you have an abnormal fear or something. And I can see people relating to homosexuals as personal. But still not agreeing with their sexual choice. I think that's kind of a loaded term to say.
I prefer the term homoskittishness. but I think I'm the only one who's coined it. And it hasn't made the media. So, but homophobia has. But I think you might have a case. But then there are other people who much feel it a lot more.
I'm curious and wondering where physiological studies are going to lead our researchers in homosexuality. Perhaps there is not a choice for these people. For some of the people, maybe for others, yes. Mm-hmm.
Some studies have shown that they don't know if it's genetic or developed very early in life, but most people have their orientation set, I think it's by age 3 or something like that. That it's a set. Now whether or not, you know, that's genetic or environmental, it happens very early. You know, is the studies that I've been seeing, and if some of you disagree or agree not or say no, yeah. Here and then here.
Yeah, Gary, that's from what I understand is true too. And I think one thing we want to remember in that is that, you know, most gay and, well, all gay and lesbian people, when they were children, were raised by heterosexual people. So it's not a learned kind of a thing. It's something that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out of a parental kind of a home life.
Mm-hmm. Over here, and then here, and then back there.
The big exception to that age 3 theory is for teenage boys who maybe have some sort of an experience which they interpret to be a homosexual experience, and that is very confusing to them. And it takes a long time sometimes for those young men to figure out really where they are. So it can be situational.
They say about 50% of the male population has had some sort of homosexual experience, and you know how they deal with that can be very.
Well, first of all, in gay circles, there's talk about doing a study to find out why people are heterosexual. But there's so many people who have difficulty with any issue that involves sexuality that it might help kind of make an analogy that goes out of that realm. Like, if you lived in a world where to be acceptable you had to have yellow hair, you had to be blonde, and maybe as a baby you looked like you were going to be blonde, and then as you started to grow up you noticed your hair getting darker. First you might say, well, I guess I'm just dirty blonde, and then maybe you start bleaching it and start being tense around blonde people all the time because the roots might be showing, and really afraid to ask your blonde friends over because they might walk into the bathroom and see the hydrogen peroxide and they'd know what you were doing with it. So if you look at it from that angle.
Interesting. Yeah.
But how, the only thing I question that for is that you couldn't have children. And children are what they generation after generation continue. And that's the only thing from your analogy that I understand your analogy on understanding your own sexuality, but why
why do you say my sexuality?
No, what you were saying when you were putting your blonde hair, the brunette hair, but that homo people would make a study on why we're heterosexual. Do you see what I mean?
It's a sort of an in joke.
Okay.
Back here.
I was going to say, as far as how homosexuality is learned, whether it's genetic or environmental, I know that there are some psychological theories, you know, about age 3 and where you not only get your sexual preferences, but your entire personality base is related to your mother or your father, and that mechanism doesn't work, you can become homosexual, heterosexual. I mean, it's very complex, and they don't really know. So even if your parents are heterosexual, or whether they're homosexual, that doesn't guarantee one way or the other what kind of personality, much less sexual preferences.
Yes.
Just to read fact that about getting close to someone. I teach elementary school, and a lot of times kids will tease each other if say boys are touching each other. And it's an appropriate thing, but it's the teasing that comes up and the kid saying, you know, oh, you're gay, you know, and he touches a friend or something. And maybe that probably isn't going to affect the kid in a major way, but maybe it might, if the person has heard it a few times, maybe some kind of message will get through that touching another boy or a male, if you happen to be male, is not something that is acceptable or you should do.
I find it amazing on campus, at least both campuses I've worked on, there's always been, if you're gay or lesbian, wear blue jeans today, ads. And how many people consciously think about not wearing blue jeans on that day when they see that ad? You know, that's a little bit of that homophobia. Just, you know, it's that teasing stuff too. Why are we quiet tonight? Every other night, hands going up all over the place. And we have a crowd here tonight.
Yeah. About the reproduction issue, I think that, well, I don't go with that because there are always going to be enough heterosexuals around to reproduce generation after generation. So a person's choice, I feel, is a lot more valid of an argument. Because, I mean, look at all of us.
I have suffered some oppression being a part of an infertile couple. But just because I cannot reproduce, I don't have to take all the stuff that gay and lesbians have to take. And the analogy would hold true there, too, in some of that. Yeah. Does somebody want to say anything about why the silence? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think, personally, I'm being sort of polite tonight. Did I hear the first speaker correctly that he advocates killing or taking the life of people who are about homosexuals?
No. I said that the issue is not an example that I was brought to believe that they would be treated as criminals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. So I don't. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was. If I had heard that, I thought we were being awfully polite.
But that was part of my ground rules to at least respect the viewpoints of other people. So, but that doesn't mean you can't challenge them. Yes.
Are we aware of Lutheran's concern?
Want to say more about it?
Well, you can say it. I'm aware of the group exists, and that I'm sure that part of their concern is to educate people. I've read a very interesting document that they put together called A Call to Dialogue. And I think probably part of the silence is, I would interpret some of the silence is that we don't know a whole lot. So, you know, you don't want to talk about things you don't know too much about. I really thought the document was really a worthwhile thing for people to get a hold of and read. It helps you to see another perspective. There is a lot of biblical, a lot of scriptural reference. And it was very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to tell you the hold of it, though. It's a national organization. Can you say any more about it?
I'm sure that the address appears somewhere, probably in the research packet or something. It's a ministry to and with gay and lesbian, gay and lesbian people. It's to and with. You can belong to it and be either gay, straight, or lesbian as well. Mm-hmm. But it's an organization that is trying to help the Lutheran Church take a look at the homophobic structures of the church.
Sure.
Also, I believe the organization encourages churches to, I forget the term they use, but to accept.
To reconcile in Christ.
Yeah, there are churches that reconcile with Christ.
Yeah, Elmer, and then there was a hand over back there, and then Doc.
Our tiny congregation in the village, which is not older than us, but a congregation here of the ALC, is a congregation that reconciled Christ with members.
Can you briefly explain what that means?
That just means that we want public to say we will receive those members, people who are of any sexual orientation, and that we indicate that we are welcome to members.
And that would seem like it would be such a, we have to realize what we would be able to come up with.
Well, again, we can see through the building that's up on the resource, I mean, that the rest that's up on the resource.
Good.
That would be good.
Good.
Okay. I believe that in this whole area, we're in some type of evolutionary process whereby we as Lutheran Christians or Christians are coming to know more about what's happening in terms of sexual orientation, sexual preference. And I think frequently we have to separate our Christian responsibility as Christians in caring for all people, whatever way they choose, rich, poor, sexual orientation, whatever. And separate that sometimes from the difficulty of looking at the policy kinds of decisions which confront all of us in our work or in our areas. For instance, an area that I think gave me some new insights where I indicate one even in looking at some street kids in Seattle. And kids that are, you know, just rejected completely. And you look at 10, 11, 12-year-old kids who are tossed out of their home because parents can't accept or can't care about the fact that their preferences are starting to be noticed. So out of the home and onto the streets, and then from that point on, little or nothing can be done unless there's a major intervention processes. So I think we have to, sometimes as Christians, we have to make sure we don't fail our responsibility to love others no matter what situation they find themselves in. Now the policy areas, that's another we have to take a hold of and deal with it as we go along. Legislator, I work in the area of lobbying, and this whole problem of adding sexual orientation in terms of rights. And I'm not sure. I have a real question about that area against the other kinds of rights that exist. But nonetheless, we're dealing in a legislative policy. And I just want to get back to the basic issue of our evolutionary process, because I think it started at the rejecting punitive stage. That's how we know it. And we're moving into an area of looking at it as Christians. How do we come to really understanding their need to be accepted without regard to their right?
Perhaps it would be useful if we spend a little bit of time in talking about why the phobia exists. For some religious reasons, social reasons, psychological reasons, etc. Maybe that's a way to get at an understanding of the different types of reactions.
Do you want to pick any one of those and say, or somebody else wants to?
Well, I would just like to bring up a topic that no one's mentioned, and it's amazing to me that it hasn't been mentioned, but there was probably plenty of homophobia before, but in the last year or so, the whole AIDS question, I think, is going to be the real volcano of this rising to a fever pitch, or it could happen. Because of the fear of this terrible disease, which we don't quite understand.
We can, yeah. I won't say anything. Yeah.
One of the things I find interesting is that in a lot of literature that's put out about AIDS, you know, from gay organizations, that they want so much to stress the togetherness of homosexual men and women, that they identify it as a homosexual, you know, issue. It's not just a homosexual disease, but the issue as one for men and women. And so I have friends who's, well, let me give you one example. It was a friend of mine, woman, whose mother was going into the hospital, and this friend of mine had the same blood type as her mother and offered to give blood. And her, and she was a lesbian, and her mother said, I don't want to give your blood, I'm not going to get AIDS. When in fact, of course, the incidence of AIDS is lowest in lesbians, and then secondly in heterosexual people, and highest in homosexual men. But that's how it's identified. It's not a, you know, it's not a strictly homosexual disease, but it's primarily a male disease.
Yeah.
I think it's just from my own experience in Missouri, and I teach that it needs to be put on the table that even at Lutheran colleges in very otherwise loving environments, there are an awful lot of young people who are just indescribably torn apart by the fact that there's no understanding for their gay orientation. We see these kids all the time in our work with them in Chicago. And they have never had a setting in their family, in their church, in their university, in their college, where any possibility occurred to them that they could find a community to deal with. They're clear that they're gay, you know. They don't know a lot. I mean, they've got communication. So there's some sort of obligation, it seems to me, to think about religious community, this caring community. And there certainly is a sense in which I'm absolutely convinced that the church has fallen totally short in providing the caring communities that young people particularly need in dealing with these things. And part of the silence here is fear of being judged, I think, right? I mean, people who have different positions on this question are fearing that they will be jumped on, which is perfectly natural in this culture. We're all upside sexual. Often hopefully, but this one's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what the silence is about, at least as I sit here. I think we're not only talking about homosexuality, we're talking about sexuality, you know, and when I think about that, I mean, I don't have it together sexually, and I there probably are very few people in this room who have together, and it brings up all my anxieties about intimacy, so I'm aware that that's going on in me, and I feel good about homosexuality, and I live in San Francisco.
Too bad everybody in San Francisco can't do this. Question where?
Okay. Oh.
There, and then there, and then over here.
This is a point of information I've heard, and I don't know if it's true, that ordaining homosexuals is one of the biggest, a big interest of the merger, and that the LPA wants the acceptance of ordaining homosexuals and the others don't. Is that true?
I haven't heard that. I don't know if anybody can speak to that. Yeah.
Again, because the policy, I mean, you know, it's passed. It's not a. Our church has made that decision. It's a complication.
I don't think that's true. I think that part of what's been spread around by organizations like FELP, the Fellowship of Evangelical Lutheran Ladies, that is the LPA. doesn't have a significantly more liberal position on that than anybody else. And I think that some of that here is actually kind of surprising for a greater semester, right?
Okay. Who did I say was number two? Well, yeah.
I think one of my concerns about whether homosexuality or the age issue is I tend to find myself wanting to be as non-judgmental about the person that is either homosexual or has AIDS as possible. And I find myself being coming down on the side of the person who is homosexual or who has AIDS when I find others in the religious community, such as in Seattle, who are certainly in institutions attempting to say they don't have rights in terms of employment or in terms of their place in society. When somebody in the religious community says they don't have rights, I get really angry, and I tend to come down on the side of the homosexual or the person of AIDS. And I think a lot of that is, as an attack on the other side of the religious community rather than addressing the issue itself.
Yeah.
There is some answer to that, though, but I have a friend who, in the last year since I've known him, has confided in me that in his earlier days he committed fornication with some women who were had been married and had children, but were no longer with their husbands. And he admitted to me that he had done it several times. And I listened, and I didn't condemn him, and he brought it up since then. And I prayed for him to say, I say in God's word, it's clear cut that fornication is not to be done. Now, in the pastorate, in churches, there have been cases of pastors who have committed adultery and have been found out. And sometimes it's resulted in a lot of really hurt and a lot of anger with the church, particularly that brought that pastor through some disciplinary measures until he was restored again to fellowship and had come to the point of repentance and so on. Now these are sexual issues, and that's what we're talking about. Now, on the issue of fornication and adultery, I think the Word of God has some clear-cut statements. And we really don't have any trouble with those, yet they have continued. Even the people who really don't want to, but find themselves caught up in it. Now, we can address those issues because they're two separate things. You know, you just cannot communicate. It's not something that works. But in the issue of sexual orientation, the issue of what we're saying is that we don't know what that is. And if a Christian really can't attack it to make an adultery, because it's for a God to be back to an adultery, and a good and a righteous will hurt. And the real thing is that we don't know whether a Christian orientation is a problem or God or not. I think that's where we're from. We have to decide what does God say about sexual orientation, and then we'll learn how to deal with it, whether we will call for repentance of the people, or whether we say that it's okay the way you are, go on, and we accept you. So, we have to decide as Christians what is God saying about this. Because it seems just as I said, we're very certain we know for a lot of years what fornication is out there, and what is going to be the people. That's what I thought.
So what does God say?
And it's a sin of sin. Whether you think it or do it. And it's a pretty clear statement. And he reserves the right to judge. and they were all faithful. And between now and then, the question we have to say, how do we, how do we practice our own Christian life, and then that debate is constant one and the other way. But I don't think that looks like what standard thing to me just to have a homosexual and whether they you cast a stone, hard enough, in a great state. But I mean, you're gonna have to look back and say, Lord,
I think someone in English goes
to hear. I guess my question to you is, what experience do you, when I hear that sort of definition of what I hear sort of goes against what I hear? Do you understand that that which separates us from God and separates us from life? If that's the case, if the homosexual lifestyle is sin, is that preventing life?
Well,
Where are you saying that homosexuality is sin, or some homosexual act is
right,
sin?
I'm saying,
No, there's a lot of people who make a distinction between orientation and act. And orientation is a lot of people say, but some acts are. Some people say all homosexual acts are. There's a lot of variance there. So I don't know where.
I can see some acts being destroyed in terms of, separation again.
But would you say the same about heterosexuality too?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, Scott?
I think one ingredient in the homophobia in our society is the fact that much of what we read about homosexual activity among males, not lesbians and males, is that it is so promiscuous that one individual has
I say it's also upsetting if any of you are ever in St. Cloud, if you go to the Red Carpet, which is a heterosexual pickup spot, and to think about heterosexuality in light of that promiscuity, you get a different picture of heterosexuality as well.
Okay. Or even a step before that, how many of you kind of know where you stand? And I'm not going to ask you to explain it. And you can if you want. How many kind of know where you stand, but you don't know how to put words to it, or you don't think you ought to, or you're afraid of repercussions or something like that? But you have a general idea kind of how you feel about this topic.
We know how we feel, or we don't know how we feel.
Well, no. I'm wondering if somehow, if you could, with everybody's hands heads down or something like that. If you write in five sentences or less, where you fit, if you want to use this is kind of artificial, where you come, you somewhat have an idea of where you are. So that could be one reason that what you were saying, or other people, because there's so many conflicting reports out that you are just confused and you don't have any idea where you are. So hands up again for those people who kind of know where they are, but they don't know how to put it in words. Okay. Okay, do you know where you are? How many of you know where you are?
Did you still object to that question?
Yeah.
Okay, why?
It's kind of forcing people to take a public stand.
No. Or the second, or the...
No, but I think there might be people who feel, I have to put my hand up.
I'm a secret ballot.
Okay. And that's not really what the issue is.
Okay.
The issue is not how one of us individuals feel, is it? I
mean,
that's not...
So, okay, then what is the issue? Then tell me what you think the issue should be, or...
I thought we were trying to discuss homophobia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's not necessarily how you feel as individual and you react to the
Is it or is it not? Yeah.
Well, I came here because I wanted to get some information. And there's two kinds of information I would like to get. Number one, I would like to hear what Christ said about it, what biblical interpretation is. Number two, I would like to know what the biology of it is all about.
Okay. The first question, it isn't, I can give you a quick answer, but it's not the one you're looking for. Somebody gave me a pamphlet once that everything that Christ ever said about the subject of homosexuality, and opened it up, it was blank. There is nothing that Christ has said. Now, there's stuff in Scripture which goes into a lot more issues. And I think that's probably what you were asking. Yeah. And we could spend time there if we'd want. There's other hands up before.
And then just clarification.
Yeah.
When you open the discussion, do you say rejecting the homosexual, or do you say rejecting homosexuality in each of those cases? Would you not have maybe two dimensions of that problem?
You could make it two if you wish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's
okay. Does anybody else want to say what Paul says? Do you want me to share a little bit about that, or what is that? Is that the direction you would like to go? I can say something very briefly, and then we can expand on it if you want. The Bible, as far as my studies go, says nothing about orientation. The Bible, in about 22 references, says something about specific sexual acts, homosexual activity. And that most of that is cultic prostitution, getting boys when they were very young, training them to do favors for men. It's many of these men who are heterosexual, but Paul, in Paul's times in Rome, at least some interpretations now, are saying that those times they were putting off their true nature, their heterosexuality, to go sleep with these young boys. And Paul was coming down hard on that. Another way you can interpret Paul, there's a whole laundry list in Romans 1 of many different things. Envy, pride, and other sorts of things. And I think part of maybe our homophobia might be, why do we elevate homosexuality up and not some of these other issues? Pardon?
I've been preaching, brother.
The issue basically is an issue of idolatry in Romans. And many times sexuality gets in the way of worshiping God. And at that point, it is wrong. Now, that's an incredibly oversimplified version of a lot of stuff that some people may disagree with, or some people may want to clarify. Yes?
If you were here to follow up, how would you answer? Oh. I mean, really, there's a whole other school of thought, and what is their rationale based on Scripture is very important.
Homosexuality is a distortion of the creation and is sinful. And anybody who is homosexual is sinful and falls short of the glory of God. But even Paul, I would have to say then that we all do fall short. So I don't know how Jerry Falwell can say all of what I think he says. But somebody else may know that line a lot better than I do. And I admit I am biased at this point. And I think it was obvious.
Yeah. I
I'm sitting here and I'm good. And there's a lot of intellectual talk about homosexuality, and I'm feeling a little bit restless and anxious because there's just a lot of groups. But like I don't know, how did your gut react? Like, if I told you in college I was a lesbian, what's your gut feeling right now? And that's not being, you know, that's, I, there's something that's not being expressed in this group.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it could be expressed. I'm not saying that this is wrong, but I have a longing for that other to be expressed. And it's like, I love lesbians and homosexuals because I've had a lot of interaction with them. I feel like I have, well, I'm heterosexual, by the way, but I have a lot of interaction with them on a daily basis in San Francisco. And yet, when I walk up to take the common cup in communion, there's a part of my gut that thinks, uh-oh, what if the person before me has it? I mean, there's still that little part of me, even though I have this contact and I see myself as open and accepting, there's still a twinge every now and then. And it's that twinge that I want to get.
And then over here, and then over here.
Okay, great. Let's say that we have somebody here, let's just sit and let's say, you believe that homosexuality is for the last existence, the sin and God, you're saying, it's not natural, don't do it, okay? Let's say that you're a person like that. Now, here, you see somebody openly flaunting this lifestyle, and you have this personal belief about this thing that's been multiple flaunted. The problem, I think, is that it is so blatantly opposed to your inner conviction that it almost makes you real again. Whereas it would be similar to have somebody come up and say to you, I am out committing adultery with this person, that person, that person. If somebody probably would tell you that. Somebody might not probably tell you, I just robbed this bank or I just stole this much from this person. I just beat up as many people. They wouldn't do that. You know those things are not appropriate behavior, and if you believe that, as some people do, that homosexual behavior is not appropriate, then, and it's so blatantly being proposed, then it's also very painful. And it's probably more, it rises above all the other things because it's so blatantly being promoted. Okay, okay. Mm-hmm.
A couple of added advantages to our discussion. One is, you know, when we move to our closet as a gay person, when we had this discussion before, and someone has been here at our first discussion, it must have totally different experience just because we responded. And perhaps we're open now. But we all should be able to share with whom do we know that is gay. A friend of ours, a relative of ours, or something like that, and how we respond and react to that person. And what I think maybe straight Christians could be is acknowledging more their own same-sex relationship. I know my homosexual relationship with my dad. We were not genetically sexual, of course, but it was my dad and I happened to be the same sex. And he was going to be deeper. That happened to be the same-sex relationship. We also affirmed that. I have a dear friend who was in Belgrade, Indiana, who was met in 1938. If Kyle were in need right now, I would excuse myself, tell the board I'll be back, so that he can head for Indiana. Because of that relationship we had, since I don't even know how to do it, 1938, I felt rebel. And again, it has nothing to do with genetic or sexual relationship. It is a sexual relationship. We both are human beings. We both are men. And it's aimless with women, especially their fondness for the relationship we have that happens in the same sex. Then don't go to the point where we said before, you don't do it in one of those things. You get it in all wrapped up with genital activity. As if sexuality is all wrapped up in the expression of a penis or a vagina or you need something else, or you're done with something. I think that kind of, you know, getting at that might be helpful to all of us, to share it with other folks, too, not only one.
Although I hesitate to categorize myself as any of the scale of comments on the agenda, and but and while it sounds all very well beginning theory to reject the act that it's just the person, I don't know how to do that. It just doesn't work. You can't, it's very difficult to separate what somebody is from who they are. You can love, you can do it here, but you can't separate the someone. I can't although my friends who are homosexual, one friend, these are all friends who I knew in high school and now in college, but not homeless, but one woman I knew, she was gay when we were in high school. And I know if we ever saw her again, I wouldn't have any problem with it, have an issue with me. The three males, I found out from somebody else after I no longer had contact with them. And I think what would make me most uncomfortable about meeting up with them is knowing that they hadn't been honest with me, and that they'd been hiding something from me, and that they didn't know that I knew something about them that I really knew. And I think that's the most my uncomfortableness has come.
But do all of us blame people for not sharing because of,
I don't blame them, and yet I still feel, I don't know if it's betrayed, not so much betrayed, but I feel, I don't know if that's what I'm saying.
Maybe some other people can pick up on that point.
I'm trying to say that I can accept, I do accept them as who they are, and yet it's more difficult for me because there's this unknown part about them that I didn't know about them when I had.
You'd be surprised how many unknown parts there are about me.
I just wanted to say...
No, Elmer said no, he wouldn't be surprised. Thanks, Elmer.
No.
Excuse me.
Well, whenever I talk to people who are really trying to either take away the rights of people because they're gay, or limit them because they're gay, or not give them rights because they're gay, and we talk about it, what a lot of people end up saying to me in this real horrified tone is they recruit into their ranks. And isn't that part of Christianity? For those of us who aren't Christian, it does make us a little uneasy. But, to use that phrase in that way isn't looking at what Christians are.
Over somewhere up here. What? Yeah?
Oh, good. I was afraid to read. I find that
up there you have to lower your
hand. I know why. The question of knowing where you stand is sort of an abstract sense to be the wrong question, because I think if somebody had told us most at the age of 12 on where we stood on the idea of whether our parents should have sex or not, I mean, we would have all thought it was the most horrible opportunity. Because, it's so strange and weird. But so it's not until, so I guess I think the idea, most of us in this room probably don't have homosexual experience. And so the idea of us taking an abstract stand is strange. I think Well, not strange. It's understandable because we should have to make judgments. But I think, I guess I'd rather ask the question of how many people in this room don't have a son or a daughter, a good friend, a second cousin, a niece, a nephew who's homosexual. Because I think it has to be the personal relationship with someone who is homosexual that then helps us take an informed position on sort of, it's not just an abstract idea, it's people. It's a member of my church council. It's a second cousin of ours who died of AIDS. It's a very good friend of mine. I mean, it's people that we know and love, and that's how you can come to an informed understanding about the issue of homosexuality. So I'd like to, you know, poll people on that, meeting, how many people don't have any kind of personal experience with a relative or good friend who's homosexual. I think that's a good question.
Okay. Raise your hand if you don't know anybody.
That's
gay.
That
you don't know that you know. No, that they're there. That's correct. You don't know that you know they're there. Okay. Yes?
Why is it so important that people be honest about their homosexuality by telling you that, yes, I am gay or whatever? Because we don't go around announcing that we are heterosexual. I mean, my good friends obviously know that about me, I suppose, by the way I act or something, but I don't confide in them that I am heterosexual. And so, I don't feel that I'm being dishonest with them not telling them that or something. And so I don't think it should be such a big deal that homosexuals come out to everybody, or even people that they are sort of close to or whatever.
One here and one here, and then I think we'll wrap some things up here.
Well, it's not really the same, is it? Unless you're outside of a group of the majority, you can't really see what's being excluded. You know, as white people, I think most of us here, I would say, are white, safely. You don't realize when you look around at the movies, the billboards, you know, just everything in our society that pretty much excludes people who aren't white. When you look at something and it's telling you that you're not included. And it's that way if you're a non-Christian in a mainly Christian society that has set breaks for Christmas and Easter, holidays that you may not celebrate. And so if you're homosexual and you're with a group of your friends who are mostly heterosexual, and they're talking about the great date that they had with Eddie last weekend or something, and you may not be able to say, you know, I had a really great date with Doris on Saturday. Turned out really well. Unless you're outside, you don't realize what you're excluding.